Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. Today's episode is entitled, The Clothes Make the Team, and it's about how uniforms come to symbolize the success and other things when talking about, like, maybe the sports fandom, mythology of sports, whatever. And our guest for this episode is someone who knows something about, I guess, uniforms, nostalgia, sports, Doug... Keklak?
Yes.
Oh, I pronounced it right!
You got it right.
Winner!
First try. That's great.
First try. And that was the keeper take, too, man. All right. And so you have this fascinating interest in uniforms, right? And so could you explain a little bit about, like, sort of what UniWatch is and how this works as
part of
a dimension of your fandom?
So, you know, even pre-UniWatch, and we'll get into what that is, you know, I always was a fan of the sports uniforms. And I always tell people my early sports memories, my first sports memories are, for some reason, 1982, the year 1982. Mm. So I won a pack of baseball cards at the church Easter egg hunt, and I was hooked.
Nice.
And if you remember what baseball looked like in the early 80s, it was very colorful. So I think one of the first cards I got was Nolan Ryan.
Oh.
And, you know, the Tequila Sunrise uniform. And like, oh, wow, everything's color. All the A's pictures had them in the yellow and green. And the Pirates had the mix and match era. So it probably influenced me that the sports cards I was collecting in that era, like those, and in all sports, really, very colorful era. I guess I took note, and it was always something that interested me. You know, there's a whole other section of fandom that could care less. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever the team, I'm rooting for the team, I don't care what they're wearing, that type of attitude. So, but for me, I always, you know, to this day, I talk about, oh, wow, that's a good look, that's not a good look. If you follow me on Twitter, you see what I'm talking about. The UniWatch thing, so that's a daily blog that really, I mean, it's just so into it. And Paul Lucas is the writer. He writes on that blog and does ESPN spots. And I've known him probably, actually, I think I discovered his writing when he was with Slate, if that's still a thing.
Yeah, that still exists.
Yeah, now he used to write a column in the Village Voice, but I discovered it when I first got a computer, you know, and followed him on that. And then, if you recall, the old ESPN Page 2.
Which was
so much better than, you know, like, that anything. Whole concept was very alternative and just neat. And he fit right in there. His writing, his style and his views fit right in there. So, and, you know, and it went, you know, to a bigger place where, you know, it's daily content. And I can't even recall, he's going to get mad if I promote this out and he listens, because I don't even recall how long he's been doing it. But I mean, I've met him in person a few times. Mm-hmm. He's done meetups, and it's just a community. You know, there's a comment section that's very robust. I don't dive in there as much as I used to, but, you know, there's a lot of opinions, and it's a great topic of conversation, I think.
Yeah, and I want to actually rewind the tape a little bit, because thinking about, because you sparked a memory in my mind, because for me, baseball cards actually came before baseball fandom. And there was that incredible sense of mystery.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, oh, what is this? Like, that for me too, was a pack of 86 tops.
Okay.
For me, that I happened to, I think I got before spring training. And I don't even know why I bought them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that pack of, I remember there was 86, Floyd Rayford of the Orioles.
But isn't it crazy how you can remember, like,
yeah,
I said,
I
the Nolan
that.
Ryan.
I remember
like
that, and I remember Carlton Fisk being in that pack.
Yeah.
And it was some kind of weird all-star, glossy all-star card, and I couldn't figure out what team he was on. So then it immediately was like, let's figure out, there's teams. What is this? And it was so mysterious, and so, I mean, there was almost like a cognitive dissonance there, right? It's like, what is this? What are they doing?
You know? And not only that, but that 82, 86, even still, and probably, you know, into the early 90s, you buy a pack of baseball cards. That was the only exposure in the early 80s that I had to, like, say, the Twins.
Yeah.
Like, Roy Smalley. Like, you didn't see those teams on TV.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't even see your home market like you do now.
Yeah.
You know, fans get very angry when a game's not on. TV. And, you know, I can remember when the Pirates did, you know, first of all, no home games.
Yeah.
No home games were on the air, and it was only on the road, and it was only a handful of games every year on KDKA, and then you had Saturday afternoon on NBC, and that was the only time, other than the All-Star game and the
World Series
playoffs, you would see an American League team. You'd see Boston and New York, so that was sort of that. I think kids are spoiled today because they have access to everything, and we did, you know what I mean? We didn't.
I mean, I remember, growing up in the era of cable, I mean, it was weird because then, you know, and I guess we should confess. So, okay, the other thing is you're a Pittsburgh fan.
Yes.
Born and bred.
Yes.
I am an emotionally damaged New York fan. I think, full disclosure, emotionally damaged New York fan. As all New York fans are emotionally damaged.
What, like, are you're Mets, though, right?
Yeah, Mets fan, which is a much more fragile, anxious fandom. Yankees fans are emotionally damaged in a completely different way. I mean, it is that sort of like imperialist, like Napoleon of the Bronx kind of thing happening.
Mm-hmm.
Mets fans are like, we made the World Series last year. That was are we going to be good again this year? I mean, I saw something on a Met fan blog. It's like the Mets are a 79 win team.
I made an expression, you know, you can't see it, but wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, okay. I don't think so either. But that's just, I think, the psychology of the fan base.
Yeah.
You know, where, three balls, this is the end of the inning, this is it. Mm-hmm. It's got three, it's 3-0 count, this is the 20-run inning that will be talked about in a spring training game years, decades from now. I mean, that's just what it is. But there is that also weird, like, kind of like, yes, but we're going to win every year. Kind of New Yorkdom, mm-hmm. you know, we are owed this, something. So, but you're right. Those Saturday afternoon games, or do you remember Monday Night Baseball?
Monday Night Baseball on ABC, right?
Yes.
Yeah, like
yes.
Warner Wolf and Bob Uecker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually can remember the Pirates being on Monday Night, and Jimmy Leyland got fine because the cameras caught him smoking a cigarette in the dugout. That's my Monday Night Baseball memory.
I think the 87 Topps Jimmy Leyland card, there's a pack of Marlboros on the shelf. It was a picture taken at Shea Stadium back when Shea had the stupid 70s basement wood paneling in the dugout. I remember, I think it's one of the cards for the Pirates that year. There is a pack of Marlboros.
87 Tops.
Yeah.
The wood grain. Yeah, okay.
There's a pack sitting on the shelf.
Get a little off the beaten path, but wasn't it awesome when they put the manager cards in the packs? Mm-hmm. I thought that was cool, you know?
Yeah, and manager card was the checklist.
Well, I thought you were going to say was it Earl Weaver that had the pocket sewn into his jersey for a pack of cigarettes? I don't think Jim Leland had that, but I want to say it was Earl Weaver. I'm not sure, though.
Yeah. Oh, the bad old, wonderful, good old days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had manager cards. You had the Lloyd Mosbys of the world got a card. And that was also a way of...
The team card, too. And you mentioned the checklists, how rare they are to find one that's not actually checked. You know, because as a kid, you're like, well, yeah, that's what I'm supposed to do, right? Like, I'm supposed to take the G.I. Joe out of the package and play with it.
Exactly. And so, yeah, it was a way, you're right, it's such a way of identifying. I mean, obviously, uniforms, you're supposed to be able to identify who's on what team.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it becomes more than that, doesn't it? It becomes a way of remembering and identifying and
it's very generational.
Yes.
It's very generational. So what I grew up with was the color that a lot of teams wore on the road was light blue.
Yeah.
Powder blue. So like the gray thing took a while for me to get used to because it was like, oh yeah, well I thought the blue was your road color, you know, like that type of thing. You know, like I said, 82, that's my memory for all four major sports.
Mm.
So those are the earliest championship series and Stanley Cup, Super Bowls that I can remember. So, you know, that type of sort of a, not a flashbulb, but just sort of, that's my starting point.
Yeah.
You know.
Which is, you know, I think that's part of it, because now we also have I guess we could talk about the uniforms of the future, remember that wonderful failed experiment, but this sort of nostalgic throwback, and I think priority uniform thing, of course, part of the genesis of this is also Pirates... Banana yellow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the thing about the pirates is they sacrificed that beautiful Sunday alt uniform that they have been wearing, which was patterned in to the one they wore up until 77. Most people equate that with Roberto Clemente in his time period. And I kind of want my cake and eat it too, because I've been at the mix and matches are special to my heart. And I appreciate people that don't care for them or don't like them. And not all combinations were the best, but I've been waiting for them to bring this uniform back for a long time. So while I'm sad on one hand, I am happy that, and it's a combination that I think is pretty universally well. Like what I'm hearing from people is that the hat is sort of a take it or leave it. People are either behind it or not. But the gold over black uniform is not. It's not the banana suit, thick pins. The thick pins aren't as polarizing as the banana suit, but it's one of the the gold over black over gold type. You're not going to go wrong. And since they already have the black jersey, it only makes sense for them to go in that direction.
Yeah, which is so, and to for folks who are novices, so the mix and match is the sleeveless vest with the black. Right, is that what we're
when
about?
I talk about the mix and match, I'm talking about the it would be like 78 through 85. It was the pullover, the Sansa belt, they had all gold, they had all black.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that uniform that was it wasn't a belt, but it was almost like this elastic striped thing.
Which my little league, I didn't wear a pair of baseball pants with a belt until I was in high school.
Yeah, I don't think I ever did.
It was all pullovers, right. And we got our first. We got the uniforms we wore when I was in 10th grade had button downs and belts.
Yeah,
and that was the first time I wore anything like that, because it was just that was what schools were buying on the cheap, from the manufacturer's catalog probably. But that's what that was the way of baseball, the double knit pullover.
Yeah.
So when I say mix and match, it's just you didn't know for at least on the road. You didn't know one night to the next what the team was actually going to wear.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's right. I do remember, because you're right. The baseball cards of that era, there was so many things. And also, what now needs to also come back? The shiny jacket.
Like the starter jacket?
Yes.
The dugout jacket? Oh,
starter
Well, those have been done as retro as far as the fashion side of things, but to see them back in the dugout, It's more of a matte, flat type jacket now. You're right. Yeah.
And also, you think you don't get it. Maybe is this proof of global warming? I don't know. But remember when, when the pitcher would get the hit, they would stop the game and the ball boy would run out with the jacket.
Yeah.
And put the jacket on because, obviously if you're a pitcher, you need to run with a jacket.
And that was cool.
It was cool.
You don't see that much anymore.
No.
I mean, I saw a player wear a hoodie recently.
Yeah.
I thought that looked a little lame. I'm like, I like the jacket. It's team issue. The player's name was stitched on the back of it. Mm. It wasn't just like one you could get off the shelf.
Yeah. Yeah, that used to be special. In fact, I was thinking as a Met fan, I think the most important shiny jacket with a name on the back was actually Bernie Madoff's. He got one of those. He was in the clubhouse when the Mets won in 86.
Really?
Yeah. He was there. He was the special friend of the owner.
Very interesting.
Of course, I think now, speaking of, actually, the Mets are bringing back the 86 uniforms this year.
The Mets have, I think they have a good look. They've had a lot of the UniWatch people that may decide to listen to this. They had a Ditch the Black campaign where they arbitrarily added black to the palette because black was neutral and black was the new white.
Yeah.
And the purists really hated it. And I personally, as a concept, and it's one of those UniWatch acronyms, BFBS, black for black sake, when these teams were adding black, and I wasn't crazy about it. I wasn't crazy about them doing it. Overall, as a concept, some teams did it and it worked for their for their team. Other, you know, the Atlanta Falcons, I think they made that work.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the White Sox. I mean, yeah, the White Sox,
not like 93.
Thing.
Yeah. But the Mets with that such a darker, not that dark, but with another dark color, it's like when Duke wears black in college basketball. It's not, I mean, and that blue and orange, I think just, it is, it's a beautiful look. It's and I remember blue pullovers too. I remember seeing the Pirates and Mets in Three Rivers in the early 80s and they wore the blue.
Yeah, you see, this funny thing is I liked the black. It's the 82 Donruss Craig Swan with the blue pullover and the orange letters.
That's a Keith Hernandez looking mustache there. He would have still been with the Cardinals then, probably, right?
Everybody in the 80s had a mustache, wasn't it? Wasn't that the case?
Yeah.
And was on cocaine. But anyway, but yeah, I see. I always think, because again, maybe this is my damaged Met fan psychology, but I kind of like the black. I always, you know, I remember when the Marlins came into the league as an expansion team, and the owner or somebody in front of the office executive where they're saying they did that. This is what the uniforms are going to look like. And he said in the press conference, you know, we don't want to look like the Mets. We want to look professional. We don't want to look like a softball team like the Mets.
Because of the black or because?
Because of just that classic sort of Mets pinstripe with the script lettering across the chest.
So
Mets uniform was like this thing, and I kind of went, this so, jerk.
But so teal right. Batting helmets were professional?
Yeah, remember the teal bomb that was dropped in the 90s?
You had them. You had that disaster that the Pistons tried, where
that's right.
I believe they had a night after they dropped that whole scheme. They had a night where they told their fans, "Bring something in the old." It wasn't just the teal; they had that awful logo too with the horse.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah. Yes,
they said if you bring, I can't remember if the promotion was bring an old piece of merchandise, get a new one free, or get something off your ticket, but they were trying to erase their memory. I mean, and that was like the Grant Hill days. Like, that was... Well, and, you know, Charlotte were the originator. So, you know, the team that does it first normally can pull it off because they have no history.
Yeah.
You know, Florida, it was kind of a... And, you know, it's a Florida-ish color.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. But that's funny you just said, because you think with the Pistons, too... I mean, were they trying to erase the Isaiah Thomas era?
No, they were trying. You know what I mean? They were trying to sell new replica jerseys. Is all they were doing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. All those manufacturing jobs left, and anyway, but yeah. So I think that's the other thing is, you know, because hey, you know, the banana yellow, we are family. I mean, so that's the thing. Like, if you go to a Sunday Pirates home game, you're going to hear Sister Sledge, aren't you?
I would imagine. Yeah, everyone.
It's got to be mandatory.
It was one of those days that Twitter broke. Mm-hmm. And when it came out, you know, it was like, and it was a sort of a pre-spoiler because the Pirates equipment manager tweeted a photo and you could see, it was something like jerseys ready for the season and they were all lined on hangers and you could see the white and the gray and the black and the camo. And then you see these gold jerseys and everyone starts, I guess, asking him, "Hey, what's up? Are we getting the?" And he deleted the tweet, but you know, people know how to screen capture.
Forever, yeah.
You can't erase the internet. So, yeah. But that was one of the things people were saying was, "Well, we got to hear 'We Are Family.'" And you know, it's a thing that it will always, it's the Pirates' last World Series. So, yeah. You know, there's been success on and off. Minus a couple...
20.
Couple 20, couple...
Two decades. You know. Minus the 2 decades.
So, there's still, no matter what happens, whatever success the team has had recently. I mean, even back in the 90s, in that run, people still held the 79 team in a regard. So, it'll be fun for sure. I can't imagine they won't. And, you know, there's actually outcry because the opener's on Sunday.
Mm.
And they're not wearing them that day, though, because I don't know if it's because it's a... ESPN game or part of
what?
But they'll start the next home Sunday game,
but I you know, and I think it's important too, thinking about, and I think we've already mentioned a couple players, and so now I have images in my head of Willie Stargell and Dave Parker, and you know, I mean, I remember the one, I think it was the one opening day, I didn't have a ticket, but I wore my pillbox pirate's hat
mm-hmm.
into a restaurant, and I knew the guy behind the counter. I was like, oh, it's the ghost of Willie Stargell. You know, so I have images of Dave Parker and Willie Stargell kind of dancing in my head. And it's also about then, at least the nostalgic element. It's, yeah, it's teams, it's eras, and it's perhaps also the particular people in them.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked a lot about baseball, I think, so far. I mean, I'm a baseball guy. Baseball is my king of sports. Hockey's second, you know, basketball somewhere. Football is, you know, for me. But in baseball especially, like, you get so much time with a player. I mean, 162 games, you really get to know the people in mm-hmm. a way. Or you feel like, I think, a connection to them that you don't have necessarily sometimes with other sports.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, there's a game every day.
Yeah.
You know, and some fans do live and die every day. But, you know, a lot of fans are like, we lost today. We'll get them tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know?
And you think, too, I mean, all the great idiosyncrasies of, you know, I remember what the Pirates head was his name, Larry McWilliams.
Mm-hmm.
I remember looking at, it was the 86 Topps card of him, you know, and it was like the pill, like I think by 86, like they were the only ones wearing the pillbox hat.
Well, they were the only ones after, that was a thing in 76.
That's right. That's
so, right. Not all, and I'm still fuzzy on a lot of the details, but Dan Epstein that wrote Stars and Strikes and wrote the other 70s baseball book, he's who, when before we started the show, I showed you the Cardinals.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So, you know, the Cardinals were into it pretty heavy. In fact, they even had the pillbox stripes on their helmets. If you look at the 79...
Whoa.
Not 79. It's probably... It will probably be 77. I think 77 Lou Brock tops. You'll see... Because, you know, this is an era when they were still... not a lot of them were wearing the ear flap. So it was just the crown.
Oh, yeah.
You
know,
and you could see the stripes on it. I've seen the Phillies. I think the Mets did it. But yeah, that it was something that the Pirates actually were still wearing, like, that uniform that I told you they got yeah. rid of, the 70s, early 70s. The pillbox was, the original pillbox was more of a mustard color.
That's right.
So then they brought the combinations the next year.
That's right. The black and the white. And then, of course, the Willie Stargell stars.
Right. But you're talking about this Larry McWilliams card.
Yeah.
They had worn the... A lot of people don't realize they wore the pillboxes 2 years with a classic gray road.
Mm-hmm.
They ditched the combos. They went white and gray.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went to the crown, just the regular crown pirate hat. Yeah. I want to say 87 because it was the centennial. I think that's... Yeah. Yeah, because 85 and 86, and those were Leyland's first few years, which were pretty dreadful. But yes, you bring up Larry McWilliams. I remember that weird
delivery.
Where
there was the picture of that
butt.
Yeah, his, like, the weird leg kick. And I remember going, like, how's he going to throw it? Like, how is that ball going to get the home plate? Like, at the time, I didn't understand baseball very well. But I knew that from the stance he had, it was utterly impossible for that ball to make it to home plate. Under its own power. Yeah, you know what I mean? But there's all of those. I mean, I know Mets fans in the 80s had the Tuffle Shuffle. Like, Tim Tuffle would get in the batter's box and do this weird
shimmy thing.
And
yeah.
People would go, oh, I remember, you know, that thing.
Yeah, because you got to remember, we got WOR in our cable. So I watched just as much Mets ball as I did Pirates.
So you had to suffer with Tim McCarver.
Oh, Kiner's Corner, too.
But Kiner's Corner was a wondrous disaster every time. It was so great.
Well, I like that, and I like the Banner Day that they would
do
on
the double Banner header? Day, mm-hmm. The old fashioned, yeah.
And they had the little kid Webster or whatever that they would bring mm-hmm. out and have the promotional items. They put them in a gym bag or something. Remember that?
Yes.
Oh, and then, God. You know, TBS with the Braves, and then later WGN with the Cubs, and White Sox. So, you know, by then, local teams were broadcasting most of their games. But those 86 Mets, I mean, I followed them and rooted for them like they were a second team.
Yeah.
You know?
The bad guys won?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I remember the WOR, the news that year, did the sports reporter did the 10 best fights of the year.
And there were 10.
Five of them. Well, five of them were boxing matches, and then five were all Mets brawls.
Okay. But, oh, what was that guy's name? Lloyd Lindsay something, the weather guy. Hello! Oh.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because I in the classroom, I do that. I guess I do that a little bit on this. Hello and welcome. That's totally him.
Well, that, that's and Lindsay, yeah. I mean, I remember I made a reference to Joe Franklin the other day that I don't think anyone got. It had something to do with how messy his office was. Yeah, yeah. And then you had Morton Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the Howard Stern Show. I mean, there was a point in time where I thought that was going to take SNL off the air. I mean, we would come to school Monday and be like, did you watch Stern? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Snapple. He only had Snapple. The whole show is sponsored by Snapple.
Good Lord. But yeah, and so it does open this door of thinking about, you know, and I think conversely, I remember the first time I was here and the Steelers won the Super Bowl, you know, they weren't wearing the jerseys. They were wearing the, you know, the sweatshirt that you can buy from QVC 5 minutes after the game's over.
The parade. Yeah, yeah.
Joey Porter passed us four times. Not really, but I in the crowd, because what happened was, so I was teaching downtown at the time, and basically my students couldn't get to class because of the parade. That like, literally parade. Three people showed
Super
up.
Super Bowl 40 was nuts, yeah. Because there was, it was, those pictures still to this day, like, how was there not a riot or something?
Yes, you know, I remember.
Or a disaster, I should say.
Yes, I remember actually just seeing, so what happened was three students showed up, and I was like, well, this is pointless. So I went to watch the parade. I was like, I don't even like the Steelers. But I'm going to go watch that parade. And yeah, and I do remember that parade. Actually, I didn't see Jerome Bettis, but I saw him in the back of the convertible just hold the Lombardi trophy up for a second. And then, but yeah, but without the uniform numbers. And as important as Joey Porter was to that team and his personality, basically, every large African-American gentleman on the back of the pickup truck was Joey Porter.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, Joey Porter! And then, hey, it's Joey Porter! And then, like, the fourth time, it actually was Joey Porter. You know? And it was sort of like, I remember, like, yeah, you don't maybe necessarily get that with other sports. And, like, with hockey, I mean, unless you're Craig McTavish and you're not wearing the helmet. You know what I mean? It's a kind of a different ball game, quite literally.
Yeah. Hey.
Hey, I'm here all week.
Cause it's a puck.
But I think the next thing, let's talk about teams. Let's talk about teams and how their uniform maybe helps. I mean, I think we're talking about Pirates and Mets. Yes. Mets, the again emotionally damaged thing. The Pirates, the both like one of the greatest franchises ever and one of the worst franchises ever.
They really are. I mean, there's no doubt about it. The famous line about when they Ralph Kiner was traded and he complained that, you know, he hit all these home runs, and I'm paraphrasing, but was it Branch Rickey said, you know, we can lose 104 games without you. It was kind of, that was, if you look on Baseball Reference, those were some bad years.
Bad teams, yeah.
You know, but turn of the century, they were one of the best.
Yeah,
you know?
and in the 70s, and I mean, you know, Clemente is such an icon, and the Clemente look, and, you know, and all of that is so important. So one of the best teams. But so other teams, the way that maybe the uniform helps with the aura.
Yeah, I mean, you have your gold standard, your Yankee pinstripes, your Montreal Canadiens, your Boston Celtics, Los Angeles Lakers. It all has to do with success.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm a firm believer that while they're great looks, the success also...
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers, it's yellow.
You know, psychologically has something to do with that, yeah.
It's jaundice. it's jaundice. That's what it is. It's jaundice and purple.
And, well, you know, purple is a dividing point in the Uniwatch world, so.
Yes. Those gloriously awful old LA Kings uniforms. I mean, you think the LA Kings had the banana and the purple.
Yeah, so you're talking to the wrong guy. I love that Kings uniform. With the big crown, I think they should go back to it, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, I like the business black, the black and the silver. The Gretzky Kings.
Yeah, the Gretzky Kings, and, you know, Al Davis was on record as not liking that at all. He thought they were just stealing. There was, if you watch the 30 for 30 that Ice Cube did, I think straight out of L.A.
Yeah.
He had, I mean, this was not too long before Davis died, and he said, you know, we didn't like that, But then he admitted it was a sharp hockey uniform, you know, like, so he thought the man went to his grave thinking he owned the colors black and silver. So, yeah. You know, you're going to have problems there. He tried to sue the Panthers, the Carolina Panthers.
Oh, really?
He thought he thought that the silver helmet with the black jersey looked too much like the Raiders look.
Yeah.
Granted, it's a completely different uniform with different logos, yeah. Striping, piping, whatever, yes. But.
And, you know, and it's also you don't have the legs. I mean, the Raiders uniform really fits the person well. Mm-hmm. The old personality of that team, I mean, the new personality of that team is, what the hell are the Raiders now?
Like, well, but it be, like, but your point is...
The Raiders, we're still a pro team with uniforms and everything. Like, that's what they got.
Are coming back to Oakland, right?
they are, I think,
a year, I think.
For a year.
We'll figure out what's going on.
Yeah, but it's just, like, so awful.
It's an iconic look, though.
It is an iconic look.
And it's sad. It's one of those teams where then it's sad to see them doing, to me, mm-hmm. doing so poorly. Because I, as a Steelers fan, I think of the Browns. This is outside the realm of uniforms. But just, mm-hmm. like, I remember when that was a big deal. And I sit there on Sundays and I'm like, I want the Browns to be good again. I want this to be...
It's not a rivalry.
I mean,
anymore.
Other rivalries crop up. You've had the Ravens. The Bengals has caught fire lately. But
yeah.
But that it's sad. The state of their franchise is sad. The Cowboys is one, too, where that logo becomes a brand. It's iconic. Yes. Is a silver helmet with a blue star really all that great? It's a good color scheme. It's not ugly, but it's something where the success, like the title of the show, you know, the clothes make the team. And that is, you know, guys know the symbolism of that star and what it means to people that are Cowboys fans, Cowboys players, alumni,
Cowboys
whatever.
Haters?
Yeah.
Too. Which I think brings me to then the teams, and you brought two artifacts mm-hmm. for us here to look at. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers creamsicle look.
Mm-hmm.
And the New England Patriots. Have the Patriots ever had a good uniform?
See, the Patriots, I am partial. This could be another one of those generational things. And mm-hmm. the hat that I brought is mm-hmm. Pat Patriot hiking the ball.
Yeah.
Which that was the Patriots helmet I grew up with, the white helmet with the red stripes and that logo on the side. And those teams were dreadful. They were awful.
Yes, and I mean, I think about that 85 Super Bowl.
That was the only time. I mean, they had success.
Yeah, that was the only time. Yeah. And then, I mean, the Bears, I remember, you know, again, not really understanding sports, not really understanding football, you know, I was 7 years old or whatever, 8 years old at the time. And just, I saw the Super Bowl shuffle video on MTV, and then to see this team, you know, with that great Bears uniform mm-hmm. come out and... Yeah, I mean, Pat Patriot and...
Well, that was a good year for them, but you still... I feel that in bad games, the loser of the Super Bowl, it's worse than going 2-14.
Yes.
Because you're in the last game of the year where everyone remembers.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone remembers that, you know, this year's Super Bowl was close, but a couple of years ago when the Seahawks trounced the Broncos, nobody really cared that maybe the Jaguars or the... Browns weren't very good that year.
Yes.
They saw the last thing of the year, and they saw a pouncing. So that was, you have bad seasons and mediocre seasons coupled with a really bad performance and the only time you got to the pinnacle, and that uniform is of a loser in the psyche of a lot of fans.
A lot of fans. And is the new Patriots uniform that much better?
No,
I mean, that looks like company, you know, intramural team.
They've gone
Division
through
eight
so
NCAA,
many changes since they dropped that look.
Mm-hmm.
They've kept what that in the uni world, what that logo that they wear now is referred to is the Flying Elvis. So that silver helmet with the Flying Elvis, but they've tinkered with the jersey. So they've tinkered with blue jerseys with white numbers, with red numbers, with white numbers, with red shadowing, with this gray. You know, none of it's a good look. It's never going to go down as a uniform that people are going to stand by and say, boy, you look back on those Patriots teams and, you know, wow, what a sharp uniform. I really don't think people feel that way.
No, they're not. But they totally get away with it.
But this uniform would be worn for throwback games.
Yeah.
And so We'll get into this. This is more sticks in my craw with the Bucks, but the NFL has this helmet rule now, where the teams can only wear one color of helmet because they're worried about player safety. They have absolutely no data supporting whether, you know, the Steelers had a throwback where they wore a gold helmet a couple years ago before they wore the striped ones.
Yes.
And, you know, I've seen no data to support the fact that switching helmets, you'd know what week the team was wearing that because you'd see them practicing in the other shell.
Yeah.
And there's colleges that wear different helmets every week.
Yeah.
And I've not heard of any numbers on the rise or maybe, you know, concussions are, you know, it's a serious issue, but I don't know that a different helmet, you know, would.
Yeah, because shouldn't it just work?
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be the same thing? Or,
but,
you know?
But that helmet.
You're not getting the helmets that you get the ice cream out of.
Right. You know what I mean? So that is a look that belongs on a white helmet.
Yeah.
So those throwbacks, which are very popular, retro is very popular.
Yeah.
Those throwbacks don't get worn anymore because of that rule.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, and you know, and it's the other team that's always then the other hat here.
Yeah.
The other team that has always had terrible uniforms and has always kind of been terrible, except for a brief John Gruden Chucky era, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I mean, it's equal, but one you can laugh at and the other one you go,
oh,
with
Dungy guys.
Yes.
Yes. And the look, this look current is terrible. I mean, that font is something out of a bad digital clock. So I and then the logo, you brag about we're going to unveil a new logo, a new helmet, and then you just take the same logo you have but make it twice the size. The creamsicle uniform, to me, is them. I've gone as far as if you search me on Twitter and search the hashtag FreeBuccoBruce, you'll see a couple times there's a picture of me with this hat on. Because, again, they wear what they call pewter.
Yeah.
So that belongs on a white shell also, and they can't wear it anymore. They wore it recently. But, you know, that hat, that logo is what they came into the league in 1976. That logo to a lot of people in that color scheme represents a winless season.
Yeah.
That logo represents the football follies.
Yeah.
You know, and a bad old stadium, the old sombrero, you know, a lot of NFL films of the monsoon water coming down the... Nothing positive outside of... They had a run there in 79 with Doug Williams, which actually they lost to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. They could have been playing the Steelers for that Super Bowl. But that's just the look that has the look of a loser.
Yeah.
And when they changed to the... Not this current, but the uniform scheme that they had worn before, which was the pewter and red, Warwick Dunn, Mike Allstott, and Tony Dungy. Dungy started coaching in that, and then they changed.
Yeah.
In the middle of his era. It was also, and I saw this phenomenon locally with Pitt, where it was like, wow, something new. And it's fresh, and looks get stale. They really do. And you know, and there is something that sometimes you just do need to change.
Yes,
but I love that uniform.
Yes, but Steve Young wore that uniform. Vinny Testaverde wore that uniform.
You're not doing a good job to help sell it for me.
Sorry,
but you know, they won the Super Bowl in the other uniform, and with this helmet rule as it is, I don't think we're going to see it again, unfortunately, and it's sad.
That is sad. And you talk about looks changing. I mean, I'm thinking about the awful Penguins triangle uniform.
Oh,
the swishy thing. They won championships wearing that jersey.
What they call the flying penguin or robo penguin.
Robo penguin.
Well, they didn't, though, because they won the two cups, and then they changed.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
Oh, see, that's the reason why.
A lot of people believe that. I'm serious. I don't necessarily go that far in my uniform.
Conspiracy theory,
But a lot of people believe that, because a lot of people think that 93...
Team should have...
93, that whatever, it would have been three in a row. Was a better team.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, you hear those stories about, you know, people still talk about the 76 Steelers.
Yeah.
But a lot of people do believe that should have been three in a row.
Yeah.
They won the, I think they won the President's Trophy that year, too. So that's a big jinx. You did that, and you changed your uniform. And the Rams went through that. The Rams ditched the more athletic gold for the Vegas gold, shiny gold, the year after they won.
Yeah.
And they went back, but they lost. But every year when they wear their throwback, people really are like, hey, that should be your uniform. And the early hope is with them going to L.A. that they're going to go back to a full-time.
Right?
Well, I don't know if they're going to have to because the NFL has some strange rules where you can only change uniforms so many years. It's not because they want to avoid the perception of, hey, you're changing your uniform every year to make fans buy what, you know, replica, the cheapest jerseys on the market now that aren't counterfeit from China.
Yeah.
Are like $100. So, you know, there is consciousness of that as far as the marketing ploy.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. And you think the Penguins had that. The powder blue, like, what's that about? It's not like there's a winning legacy there with the powder blue.
Well, it was
I'm
one of the
glad that's gone away.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was really cool for the Winter Classic.
Yeah,
and I think it had a bad luck rep for a while. They had lost some their game a streak of games wearing it where they hadn't won, and fans were kind of, you know, social media campaigning against it and. I'm with you. I'm glad. And the you know, they went back to the they brought those Pittsburgh gold alternates back this year, and oh, that was another Twitter broke day. I mean, people want that. The rumor is that they're going to go back to that look full time next year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Reebok puts out their catalog for the following season in the middle of the current season, and when there's sort of a blank outline of a jersey with nothing on it. That's sort of
the
they don't have their specs in yet because it may be changing. So all they really have to do is make a white, you know, road version of that uniform and they're set.
Awesome. But yeah, so okay, who has the worst uniforms in professional sports? Maybe not history, but maybe right now.
Right now? Oh, wow. I didn't prep for this at all. So many good choices.
So many good choices. We can talk through. Speak through. This could be like tutoring. Let's talk
I hate that current Tampa Bay Buccaneers, so we could start right
yes.
there.
Yes, okay. Bad uniform, bad team, bad everything.
Bad everything.
Bad everything.
Man. This new Browns redo... It's kind of bad. I have an opinion about brown as a color for a sports uniform.
Yeah.
And I guess I basically think that only the Padres should try to get rid of it, get away with it.
And even then,
I think that's more of my, you know, my early, my generational biases because that was a uniform I grew up with, right?
Yes. It's Tony Gwynn's uniform.
But I think that Browns uniform was like, it wasn't broke.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be simple, if you're going to go with simplicity.
Yeah, I mean that they were the Packers and the Cowboys and Steelers. Raiders as far as that long-time team with the same general look, it becomes a brand.
Yeah.
You know, and but there's some bad. And it's a very college-ish, high school-ish
look,
you know. There's some certain things I'm of the opinion that you know, a professional football uniform shouldn't have anything as far as like the words in the front.
Yeah.
It should be a number and the name and a number name on the back. And a stripe on the pant, not weird graphics or I like the college stuff. I love what Oregon does. I think it's awesome. But I think professionally there's a certain standard.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Maryland can get away with
Right.
The deconstructed Maryland logo.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. So you got that.
What are some that you... Let's talk through this. What are some you don't like? Because I'm drawing a blank.
I think of like the Seattle Mariners, which again is another team that never really won, or their great team, their greatest team didn't win.
No.
You know? I mean, that's not a quality... I mean, and they've had several changes over the years. None of them have, I think, looked good.
They recently brought that... the Ken Griffey Jr. rookie era hat back. That's a Sunday all for them.
Yeah.
They went teal heavy in the 90s, too.
Yes, they did. Teal all. Yes, that was horrific.
Yeah, teal was hot, though, man. Yeah. Oof.
I think historically in hockey, I mean, the weird Rangers Statue of Liberty head alt jersey, that was horrific. And, of course, when the Islanders went with the Fisherman.
Fisherman, you had, and the Buffalo Sabres with the Buffa Slug, they call it. That was another uniform that wasn't broke. I mean, they didn't need to.
Oh, man. We haven't really talked about the NBA, other than, I mean, the Lakers, but again, they win, so you kind of can't.
I'll tell you what, the white Lakers Sunday home uniform is one of my favorites.
Okay, that one works. That one works. It's white. It's classic.
The NBA.
Toronto Raptors.
I was happy that the Wizards went back to the old bullet scheme. I don't think that blue worked for them.
No, it didn't. It didn't. I don't know what to make of the Nets. And again, maybe that's just my era.
Yeah,
it's okay that the Nets are awful, but they're supposed to be awful in red, white, and blue with stars.
The thing about the Nets was that there were some. I don't think anyone was really sold on or in love with their look.
Yeah.
So then when they became the Brooklyn Nets,
yeah,
and all the fanfare that went on with that, and it was time for a change, and I think people were expecting more. It's very plain. The fonts are plain. It's black and white. It's very, you know, but at the same time, the same people would say, things are too flashy.
Yeah.
So it's like sometimes you got to kind of, you know, check yourself and be like, well, what do you want? What do you really want?
Another one that comes to mind, and maybe it's because I just hate that franchise, but the Philadelphia Phillies. I miss the maroon.
The current look?
The current
look. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I miss the maroon because... And the Phillies are supposed to be awful, so all is right with the world right now. You know, I mean, that team could lose 150 games this year. Who knows? You know?
Well, aren't they getting suspected that they're tanking like the Sixers are?
Yeah.
So two of the four teams in Philly are
tanking. And the other one's the Eagles. And then, you know, whatever, the Flyers are the Flyers.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is also, I mean, that's like a weird, patchy uniform.
The Flyers?
The Flyers, where it's sort of like, here's some orange, and here's some black, and here's a logo. We don't know what it means anymore.
It's a very dated logo.
Yeah,
you know, I think the Red Wings logo is dated like that, but it's a classic look.
It's a classic look. You can't get away from
that. The Houston Rockets, that look when they won back-to-back, just the red and yellow and white. It was dated, but then they wore that awful uniform. I don't know if you remember that blue with the stripes down.
Oh,
it.
Oh my God! Yes.
So they went back. It's all about, I think, the modern form. These are the modern template of uniforms. The materials have changed, so you can't really do a carbon copy of what Akeem was wearing. Mm-hmm. Versus what they wear now, because it's a thinner material,
mm-hmm.
And it fits differently.
Yeah.
You know, some of the, so it's, but it's way better than, you know, there were some disasters in that original Raptors uniform.
Yes.
You know, there were the Grizzlies.
You know,
those were some bad ones. I mean, currently right now, I think across the four major sports, and I mean, there's teams I would take and say, well, you could have done better with that, or you, that could look better, or maybe it's time for a change. Yeah. But, I mean, that you actually watch and you're like, oh, that's garish.
Yeah. Yes.
I don't know. I wasn't crazy about that Islanders alt the other night. Did you see that? It's all black.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And they have such a nice uniform, too.
Yes. Yes, of course. I guess then they're do they still have the island on the logo, even though they're not on the island anymore?
They haven't changed anything.
Wow.
It's the same logo. They're not calling it Brooklyn. They're calling it...
The Islanders, yeah. I guess maybe that's the hope that maybe they'll move back to the Nassau Coliseum once they, you know, put a roof on it.
Well, that Barclays Center, I mean, you know, with hockey being an afterthought, boy, is it quirky. I mean, you know, the scoreboard's not centered. Or you've got a vehicle in the end with all this open space. It looks like an international rink. Very odd.
Very odd. Well, have you seen the outside of it?
Mm-hmm.
It's the giant brown turd. Or it's a basket. It
looks rusty, yeah.
It's a basket. It's like a giant basket or a poop or something. And it's just so weird. You're just like, Brooklyn, Brooklyn, Brooklyn. You turn a corner and then it's like, What?
It's just in the middle of the neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like it doesn't, they didn't try to make it fit or make it look like anything, you know. But yeah, so I think, yeah, nostalgia, players, people. What else is there? What else is there in the terms of sort of when we think about uniforms or...
I think styles, and it's a very broad thing, but if you look at a baseball card from the 80s versus what players look like now as far as how tight the pants and jersey fit.
Yeah.
You know, players are swimming in their uniforms now, whereas they were skin tight, you know, at least the pants were like spandex.
Yeah.
You know, in football, you know, nobody wears any kind of jersey with a sleeve anymore. Everything's so tight and tucked up. Basketball obviously had the short shorts versus, you know, what yes, you have now. Shorts. And like I alluded to with the if you held up a game used Magic Johnson from the early 80s versus what Kobe's going to wear tonight, I mean, the thickness of it is night and day. I mean, it's not the same. They're much more comfortable now.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of money in the industry around making fabrics breathable and not just like George Costanza wanting the team to play in cotton, but actual, you know, fibers. And, you know, a lot of these companies put out a lot of crazy press releases about, oh, this costs this percent less moisture or whatever. Like, who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
But what we're saying is, like, in baseball, you don't want to wear wool anymore.
you don't want to wear wool anymore, and you don't want to wear shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Which lasted, I think, one game.
The White Sox.
I think they did that for one game, and then they remembered people slide.
Well, you know, I have such a soft spot in my heart for that uniform because it's just perfect. Like, it's Bill Veeck at his finest. Yes. So I look at the, you know, every spring when the College World Series is on for women's softball, they wear shorts and they slide. Like, I think, like, man, what, you know. I think that the socks had reinforcement or something in them, but
yes,
they were just trying to be bold, man. It's hot in the summer. They wore those uniforms, I think, in July or August when they did. So,
yeah,
that's a uniform too. That, I mean, an absolute loser of a uniform. The bowling shirt type of untucked with a collar, but and they didn't have stirrups. It was just a sock, and it's one of those where I guarantee you they won. That uniform would be revered.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where winning sets the tone. I really think that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, that's the thing. You think about the White Sox, I mean, they won their World Series, but they're almost the losers among losers for all that time. I mean, they had the long drought, but nobody talked about them because they got outlost. That's the word, by the Cubs.
By the Cubs, right.
You know, who actually, I think, have a really good look.
The Cubs, yeah, that's iconic. I mean, they went through some phases in the 70s where they had the powder blue and I believe they were one of the first to wear pins on the road because that one of those powder blues had pins.
That's right, I remember a baseball card. Yeah,
but yeah, that home white Cubs, just it's classic. You know, it's one of those that. Even they went through stages where they were messing around with the current fashions, whether it was the blue pullover that they had on the road or you know, some of the other road uniforms that they've experimented with. They've always had that look at home. It's classic. It's Boston, Red Sox, it's the Yankees, it's right up there.
Yeah, and which, unfortunately, I mean, that's the thing, again, Yankees.
Cardinals would be one, you know.
Yeah, I mean, Evil Empires, Evil Empires that look good.
Patriots
have something to learn from those teams.
Don't you think it's branding, though? I mean, I really think that, you know, I watched to invoke another 30 for 30 because you know how crazy I am about that series.
It's a great series.
About University of Miami football in its heyday. And Schnellenberger, you know, I don't know what they had. I mean, you think about Miami. No one, I mean, they've been playing football for forever, but no one remembers before that early 80s that Jim Kelly and forward Howard Schnellenberger, and I don't know what their helmet was, but they put that U on that helmet, and he's quoted as saying in that movie that was going to be our brand, that's our logo, that U is going to be like IBM, it's going to be like Coca-Cola, it's going to be and it really has. Nobody else, you hear them talk about teams. the you. It's about the you. It's all about the you. Yeah. You know, and that really has sort of lasted. Now, I'm not a big fan of green and orange.
Yeah,
I wouldn't put that as an. I wouldn't put that any of their looks in the categories of your evil empires, your Cardinals, Yankees, or like your Cowboys, Raiders. You know, like these looks. But it goes to say about it's your brand.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why a lot of people that, you know, you get this a term in the UniWatch world is logo creep, where logos are creeping on uniforms. The manufacturers are putting, you know, you're seeing Majestic logos, or you're seeing a Nike logo, and the argument is, hey, that my team's logo is its brand. The yes. uniform is its brand.
Yeah.
And it's very prevalent now because, you know, we're treading dangerous waters as far as going to be, like, experimenting or having some, you know, advertising on uniforms in the four yeah. majors, and that's not, you know, something that American sports fans really.
Yeah,
isn't European soccer.
Yeah, this isn't the Premier League.
But Kia had the All-Star game.
Yeah,
for basketball this year, and NFL relaxed what teams can sell their practice jerseys.
Wow.
Because they know, you know, they know that the media is there snapping pictures of the guys practicing. Oh, put a big Xfinity logo on there or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
They're still not able to do it for the games, but and, you know, minor league hockey, you're a fan, you know, you see what these uniforms and helmets and, you know, they put where they can. I mean, it's much worse in Europe, though. So, I mean, it's.
Yes, absolutely.
But this is the lesser of two evils type argument, but it goes back to, and that's why, you know, a lot of teams that change a lot. They don't have that look. And the White Sox were one. It's so ironic to me that they've had this look now for over 20 years. I think it's going on 25. I think they introduced that look in 93. And they were sort of made fun of because they changed so much.
Yeah.
And I was looking for it, and unfortunately I couldn't find it. But if you've ever gone to the website Dressed to the Nines, which is the Baseball Hall of Fame's exhibit, and it's the database. So, like, you can pull up by team, you can pull up the league, and look at all the uniforms, drawings, like, of what the uniform looked like. There was a book called Baseball Uniforms of the 20th Century, and it was current through the first. When did the Rockies and the Marlins come in? I want to say 93.
That was 93,
94.
Yeah.
And he had an excerpt, Mark Okunin is the author's name, and he had an excerpt in Sports Illustrated, and it was about the White Sox. Well, it just mentioned his book, which is where I knew to get this book from, and the White Sox spread was like, you open it, and it's like, they've had so many uniforms, and they had that identifying, you know.
Yes, I mean, the number, I mean, the most identifying thing for me is, of this old one, is the number on the pants.
The number on the pants,
yeah.
The beach blanket, you know. but look, Matt, they've had, it's not only just, to me, it's like, you know, the Pirates, you know, a lot of teams maybe changed their colors at one point or another. Pirate fans know that, you know, they were red, white, and blue back in the day, but, you know. Most teams have their palette. I mean, the Red Sox were red and white. Then they were blue and white.
That's right.
And they were red and navy. Like, not only change their uniforms, but their color. How do you have a brand?
Yeah.
You know?
And especially, I mean, again, all of those lean years.
Mm-hmm.
And then they won. I was like, nice for them. Oh, 90-some years? Okay.
I always rooted for them because the Cubs got all the attention in town.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, Cubs fans are tourists, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
Suffering tourists, and, you know, get over it. And now that we've probably offended people, sorry, Cubs fans, it's just the way that it is. It's your lot in life, enjoy it. They're going to be good this year.
Yeah, I had to watch that wild card game last year, so I'm not going to.
Yeah,
I'm not going to worry about making a Cubs fan mad.
Yeah, there you go. And hey, you know, let's go Mets. So, I think it's now time for the bottom five.
All right, let's do it.
The bottom five. Bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic, but that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Are you ready, Doug?
Yes.
Okay, question one. If reincarnation is real and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease or illness would you be? If you had to go single cell, virus, bug, not bug, bug, but, you know, virus.
What kind of question is that? It's, reincarnation, it's like I'll be a bird or a dog.
No, what if she's totally screwed up in this life? Yeah.
Oh, man.
The accidental 11th commandment was thou shalt not care about uniforms. And that one just got left out, but it still counts. Like, you're supposed to know.
Oh, man.
Sorry, everybody gets this question.
So,
I mean, there's the common cold, there's STDs, there's...
Oh, yeah.
Causes ringworm? I don't...
I'll definitely be genital wart, for sure.
Genital wart?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
I'm not going to explain anymore. We'll just move on.
All right. Maybe they don't get better. Maybe they get worse. But here's another one. Okay, if you had to choose, would you welcome the total elimination of day or night? Say if you had to, you know, Earth stop spinning or something, and you had to pick a side, would you be rooting for, like, North America to be on the day side or the night side?
Oh, day. Without day. A question.
Total. You want day. Eliminate night.
I mean, do you know... Have you heard of seasonal defective... That's not right.
Defective disorder, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure a new sun one would come by, but I dread the days when I'm downtown and it's 5 o'clock and it's dark and I'm still at work.
Oh,
so yeah, I'd have to go day. Plus, you know, you could have that cool like thing they do like up in Alaska where they play baseball 24 hours. So
yeah.
Think, you know, the ballpark over here, we could.
Yeah, there you go.
We'd probably have to do some weird things like trick ourselves though, right? Like we'd have to put big dark curtains up.
Yes, we would. You know, have you ever seen the Al Pacino Insomnia or the original Swedish version? Especially that one. Both those movies, you leave those movies seeing, you know, you're just tired. You leave. It's like, oh, I got to drive home now. It's so tiring. And there's this great scene where Al Pacino's in the hotel room. He's like, it's just so bright in here. And the person goes, wait, and flicks on the light. And then it gets super bright. And it was like, oh.
I think you just have a lot of zombie-like behavior if we just had night.
Yeah.
That's where I'm...
I don't know. I think it would be more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be... The weird would be weirder. Daytime weird would, you know, people would just...
I mean, I can't say I'm surprised that that's how you would answer the question.
No. But you think about it, instead of hand sanitizer in all public spaces, that you'd have, like, SPF 60...
Yes, it would.
We would all have to smell like sunscreen all the time.
We would have to be, I'm sure there would be a rise in melanoma. Yeah.
Yes. All right, question three, this is, I think, are we going for more autobiography? Yes, three autobiographical questions. All right, and you played baseball. Baseball and football, so maybe this leads to, maybe it will be things related. What's the strangest injury you've ever suffered, or what's the weirdest way you've ever gotten hurt?
Well... I lost an entire season of baseball to a broken finger.
Ooh.
And my claim to fame is that I actually can say I have plastic surgery.
Oh.
because I was a catcher.
Yeah.
And I was catching batting practice, which I thought was odd because normally you just kind of threw it, but whatever.
Yeah, okay.
So I guess I needed practice too. ball was going towards the dirt, and I was trained, you know, mentally, I'm going to get in front of it to block it, you know. So, you know, in those days, I don't think catchers do it much anymore, but the Johnny Bench, you hid your hand,
yes,
you know, behind your back to protect it.
Good, that was good fundamentals back in the day.
So I'm like this with my hand behind my back, and the ball is going to my right, and I'm getting down to block it off my chest protector, and my hand is exposed.
Yeah.
The kid reaches out for some reason and he hits the ball. No. He hits the ball, but it fouls back and my finger, it goes right off the finger and it just broke and dislocated it.
Oh.
So it was straight. Didn't hurt at all. The weirdest thing, but I knew something was wrong. I couldn't. It was just like this and I'm like, I gotta go. So I was put in the sling and, well, they had to give me a shot to pull it out.
Oh!
I was probably the hardest...
Compression fracture.
That was probably the hardest thing about it was seeing that, hearing that pop, but not feeling it. Like, it made me sick, but it was also like, that had to hurt. That's just going to hurt at some point.
Ooh.
They numbed me up, but no. But yeah, I was out, though. I lost the whole season because of that, man.
Wow.
And I still can't move that finger. That's as far as it'll ever go.
Wow.
That's, I mean, you know, it's no big deal. Yeah, I mean,
you know, the guitar playing, maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Question four. It's a nostalgia question. All right. So we talked about, you know, you're not supposed to take G.I. Joe out of the case, so mm-hmm. it stays Jim Mint 10.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to put those baseball cards in the spokes of your bicycle wheel. Mm-hmm. But can you name an item from your childhood that you lost or got rid of, or maybe your parents got rid of, like in my case, that you most wish you could get back? If there's one item that you, now that you have to think about it before you go to bed tonight, you're going to check on eBay to get that thing back.
Man, I'll tell you what. I probably won't check on eBay, but it drives me crazy that I know that there's a few of my Hot Wheels that I really like that I can't find. And I have cases of them that I, you know, I'm talking about ones I played with that were open, yes. you know, and yeah, all scratched up and scratched used. And there's a few that I know I had, and they're the weirdest ones too. It's like a Dodge Caravan, like the first time they made that.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
And one is a Chevy Citation because that was our family Chevy car.
Citation, wow.
And I'm like, I can't, and I have everything, so they're gone. So that's the type of thing that kind of, it's just
got
like
lost in a soul.
Yeah, it irks me because it's one of those things where I know I had it, you know?
Yeah. I actually, you know, the giant flea market in Rogers, Ohio, the one summer.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I went out and there was a guy who had that, speaking of that. And so I made the mistake. I had a Cadillac Fleetwood Hot Wheel, or maybe it was a Matchbox car. Wait, actually, the question is, I went and bought it back. The guy had it. It was a Yaming? Actually, it wasn't even a real Hot Wheel. Look at that. It's an off-brand toy car. And so I lost it. I lost it in my grandmother's house. And I decided when I had money to get a first car, I actually bought the car. Instead of buying the Hot Wheel, I bought the car for $700. And the 2 months that it ran correctly before the engine exploded were amazing. Say,
yeah, what was the better investment, right?
This well, that Hot Wheel was $1.50.
You know, this looks a lot like a Corgi, and I wonder if this company made Corgis for, you know, for them, branded them, because I had the Starsky and Hutch and Kojak cars,
nice.
And they're very similar to this, and that's funny because, you know, I could tell that's diecast.
Yes.
I mean, we could do a whole other podcast on Hot Wheels if you ever wanted to. But
yes, we should.
But
yes, we should.
It has heft to it. You can feel it.
Heft to
the car.
It.
Yeah, they're like plastic now. They're light.
So they're out there. It's out there. It's out there for you to reclaim. Mm-hmm. All right, last one. Question five. Question five. And this is a new question. I think you might be actually the pioneer for this question.
The guinea pig of this question.
The guinea pig of this question. I was saying pioneer in a very positive, adventurous, sort of non-colonial sort of way. But guinea pig works, too.
No, but I like that, too.
Yes. Okay, have you ever had a dream you wish you could revisit or a dream you could periodically revisit from time to time? Like, there was a dream world that you had and you woke up and you're like, oh, I'm still here, or whatever, that you wish that you could just kind of drop back in on and go, you know, remember that time with the unicorns that pooped ice cream? That was pretty sweet.
No, I'm going to just tell you flat out no.
No?
Because my dreams are the most non sequitur, weird. I was at one point writing them down. I was really? I told my friends, I'm going to write down my next 10 dreams I remember, and we're making a concept album. Because they were that stupid, you know. Got every red-blooded American hetero male wants to have, you know, the hot dream with a woman, and I have dreams like I'm a detective with Stacy Keibler, and we're buying vegetables in a grocery store.
That's so awesome.
So when you ask me, do I want to go back and live that? I'm gonna say no because it's so mundane and stupid. It's like the way Stewie dreams on Family Guy. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's splitting a bill. You know, at a diner. That's how, you know, I have to say no.
Okay, then. Well, I think that's about it. Our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something. Our homepage where you can do you have anything to hawk? I mean, other than following you on Twitter, we can follow Doug on Twitter, right?
Follow me on Twitter.
Follow me on Twitter.
I'll Doug Keklak, Dougkeklak.
Yes, and I'll throw the link on our website, which our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on the iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at GonnaDiePodcast, speaking of Twitter. And We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Thanks, as Brett, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later, folks. Later meets. Later meets. See, this is why I have a script, because I don't know. I can't be trusted. I can't. So I'm going to shut up now.